Devil's Advocates, making radio great again. There's a man in the shadows with a gun in his eye and a blade shining
no so bright. There's evil in the hand. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. If you're looking for a gift for the holidays, for family, friends, consider a gift certificate from Hazel's in Minneapolis. Give a meat waffle, the gift that keeps on giving. Keep supporting those fine sponsors, AM 950. We appreciate you, Hazel. The meat waffle, I'm intrigued. And we welcome back a fine guest on this fine program, our good friend, James Antel, former U.S. attorney. Jim, here's the sort of meat waffle I want. I want a meat waffle wrapped in a Trump indictment with the pumpkin spice former president's head on top. How about that sort of meat waffle?
You know, I was told that there would be no culinary invocations and no cooking on today's show. But even so, we'll go ahead and have this wonderful conversation. Mike, it's always good to be with you once again. It is a time when America should be rightly focused, as you has always been, on when are we going to get things done? When are we going to see some movement here in terms of prosecutions, actions moving forward, including those related to the presidency of the United States, former president of the United States of America, and the current president, not that he is the subject of those, but decisions that he makes also about how we pursue justice and the rule of law in America. So broad invocation, there are lots of things to be focused on today.
Jim, Merrick Garland, the current Attorney General of the United States, and you know, if he doesn't get moving with some alacrity, I hope he's soon to be the former Attorney General of the United States, but he gave a little testimony on the Hill yesterday, and I forget what Democratic congressman it was, but someone questioned him about the Stormy Daniels and the payoffs and the fact that Michael Cohen spent time in federal prison for lying to the Congress about this very criminal action that Donald Trump is, you know, reportedly signed the checks on. They got the receipts, Jim. And he asked Merrick Garland, you know, I get it, former president. Well, when he was the president, you couldn't prosecute the man. But, you know, equal justice under law. How about now, Merrick Garland? And Merrick Garland gave the pat DOJ response. But, Jim, I mean, I got to wonder, do you think we will ever see any sort of justice on the issue of Stormy Daniels and those campaign finance violations?
You know, you and I have talked about this at great length, and I've shared your dismay and your confusion, frankly, about exactly what happened here. We all know well that the Southern District of New York was looking at this for a time under the Trump administration, under the Barr administration, and then all of a sudden the case was closed. And the media was not given any sense of the reason for that. I share, as do I think an awful lot of people, both inside and outside law enforcement, you're again scratching your head about what happened here. This strikes me as not a particularly difficult thing to understand. Those people who are in charge of our elections have indicated this kind of thing is plainly within the ambit of criminal conduct. You are plainly asking someone, not asking them, you're paying them off to be quiet right before an election. And that is in violation, criminal violation of our elections laws. Why it is that this was either not pursued, I am still hopeful in some way that there is an open file somewhere in the Department of Justice, whether it's an SDNY or down the street at 9th and Constitution. The other thing that I would note, as we have talked before, is these events happened again in 2016. Those checks that you make reference to, in which the president's name is attached, Donald Trump Jr. is attached, his name is to the other one. Those were in, I believe, March and April of 2017. TikTok, and that's a 5-year statute of limitations. So we're coming up on a time when even the conspiracy, if you describe it as beginning right about now, 5 years ago, it kind of concludes sometime in the spring of next year. And so Merrick Garland is planning on doing something with respect to that. In addition to many other things out there, he's got a limited period of time to make good on his promise to the Americans, to be a man of the rule of law. And frankly, to respond to your particular question about when we're going to see some justice there.
Jim, the complexity of some of these issues, I can understand why a prosecutor might be reluctant, or even a political prosecution, let's say the first impeachment trial, this case of Zelensky and the influence peddling, the quid pro quo and the perfect phone call and the you got to do me a favor, though, if you want the military aid from the United States. And I've often wondered about our own U.S. Senator Ron Johnson's persuasive nature towards Zelensky as an emissary of Donald Trump. and the very man voted to acquit Donald Trump on this issue. But Lev Parnas today convicted on six different charges, including what? Funneling foreign money into U.S. campaigns. And part of what Lev and Igor Fruman were doing, Lev Parnas, Igor Fruman, you know, before they had the one-way tickets to Frankfurt, they were pushing to Rudy this whole conspiracy about, you know, the Ukraine. The Ukraine issue, and there's some dirt on Joe Biden there. And that's what the effectively the whole first impeachment trial was about, Jim. Stormy's issue seems much less complex. It might not put the guy in jail forever, but, you know, if you're just looking for some semblance of justice, lay out the easy case. Try that. Get it convicted. We all know the difficulty the Dems had in impeaching Trump on the more complex issue, but the Department of Justice, less issues getting a conviction out of Igor.
I think that's exactly, yes, I think that's exactly right. And as you know, as we've talked again at great length, Igor and Lev, so to speak, are also the pathways, if you will, to others, including Rudy Giuliani, arguably the former president himself. And that's why those prosecutions are so important. Today's conviction significant, and obviously co-defendant, presumably also cooperating with the United States government and doing all this. It underscores this broader notion, Mike, that I think you're suggesting as well, which is that, yes, we live in a political world. On the other hand, if you're truly going to be consistent with and genuine to the rule of law, you do have to make judgment calls about prosecutions and about going ahead and doing some of these things. I think that's your frustration with the president, attorney general, and mine to some extent as well, recognizing that you will always get, especially in this climate today, criticism for being political, for being a part of an administration that plainly defeated the prior administration. And yet, if you can look at yourself in the mirror in the morning, if you can stand behind that podium on the seventh floor of the Department of Justice and say, this is the reasons why we prosecuted, this is the reason why we got a conviction today, this is the reason why we're going ahead with these cases and do it legitimately under the federal rules of prosecution, which he also mentioned yesterday, you can live with yourself both today and historically. And the American people with a little bit of civics training should also understand that.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel, friend of ours. Jim, executive privilege over the January 6th committee and the evidence being sought by that committee. And obviously, Steve Bannon's trying to use the cover of executive privilege to not testify or produce documents. But before we talk about the former alleged meth head from Florida, Steve Bannon, let's talk about the former president. My understanding is he's going to get his hearing on executive privilege on November 4th. Jim, I'm not clear what the venue for that would be, and will it be determinative, or will it just start a whole series of appeals?
Right, and again, this thorny issue, and the broad things that I would say would be this, that again, first of all, the Supreme Court, other courts have not given us a whole lot of direction about what this means. Plainly, the concept is out there. I think that America suffers if we once again adopt this notion, well, it's a privilege. Anybody can assert it, and therefore it stops you from testifying. That is certainly not the case with any privilege. You've got to be able to establish that you've got a reasonable basis to invoke it. Here, executive privilege, first of all, is not owned by any individual. It's not owned by Donald Trump. I would offer it's not even owned by Joe Biden. It's owned by the presidency, the office of the president. And whether or not it is legitimate to disclose something, it's good and right and decent, and yes, legal to disclose materials. Not everything is subject to executive privilege just because it was a conversation had by the current or former president or involving someone, whether inside or outside government, including a Mike Bannon. The question is always, what is the analysis that you bring to the particular statements? And as I've said before, are the representations or the things you're talking about are the things that really do go to the functions of the government, or as in this case, very likely, are they political matters that do not implicate security issues and safety concerns and national concern issues of a much broader nature? That the Supreme Court and others have sort of said that it's a narrow notion, and again, is not subject to just this broad invocation that stops all inquiry. And I think the Donald Trump and the Steve Bannons of the world have a huge burden and a huge uphill battle to invoke it effectively.
Let's talk specifically about Steve Bannon. There was a vote First, the select committee, the January 6th committee, by unanimous vote, including Republicans Kinzinger and Cheney, they voted to advance this to the full House for potential contempt of Congress and referral to the Department of Justice. My understanding, with nine supportive Republicans, including the two aforementioned, this passed the House. Now, Jim, does suddenly this going to have some teeth? How long would it take between criminal referral and action? Obviously, everyone knows time is of the essence. And Republicans probably have this part right. The January 6th committee would like to use all of this information to roll something up before the midterm elections, before there's allegations of the next rigged election, the next stolen election. You'd like to have some clarity on what happened after the last election. But Jim, of course, Republicans and Donald Trump and Steve Bannon, all they want to do is drag this out and perhaps win back control of the House and then terminate all of these investigations. So does the DOJ, are they cognizant of the expedited timelines? And do they care? I know the wheels of justice move slowly. Are we going to find out about this on the Eric Holder 7 years down the road timeline?
Right. You know, when this news first began to break about the votes, both the committee and then, of course, the full House. Frankly, Mike, you were among the people I was thinking about, because that's the question you always ask, right?
That's a little scary, Jim.
Can we see justice soon? And what is the timetable? And I will say that this is one of those areas where I am sort of bemused to see this notion in the media and public discourse that, well, we're going to very soon see Mike Bannon in chains. And
it's Steve. I don't want people confusing me with the alleged former meth head from Florida.
Exactly. Steve Bannon, and that he is going to be in custody soon and in a federal prison. And that is simply not going to happen. So let's talk briefly about this process. Yes, plainly, it's already arrived as of this morning at Maine Justice, and more likely probably at the U.S. Attorney's Office right down the street there, also in the District of Columbia. Here's the process, and I'll be very as brief as I can. Referral comes in any case, especially like this, which is ultimately a white collar type case. It's a transaction matter. It's not a bank robbery. It's not something we've got to respond quickly, where you could, in fact, issue a criminal complaint 30 days and then get to the grand jury right after that. Here you get it. You take a look at it. You assemble the evidence, which could be, again, looking at some witnesses. What is the information you're getting from the United States Congress? It doesn't have to be exhaustive, because the question is, once again, not whether or not executive privilege should be raised, but did you show up? Did you defy a subpoena? So the analysis itself is not that broad, but you do have to determine whether or not there's a predicate for going ahead. That is done internally. Should the prosecution under the rules of federal prosecution proceed for other policy reasons? And if in fact you make that decision, then in fact you go to a grand jury. You present this to 26 people. They can return an indictment. And then you know where this goes. We have an arraignment and a plea hearing a couple of weeks after that. A judge sets a motion hearing for motions and for suppression hearings a couple of weeks after that. Decisions are made. There could be interlocutory appeals, kind of atypical, but that could happen as well. We're now talking weeks, maybe months down the road. A trial is set. That is convened. Motions for a new trial, assuming there's a conviction after that. Judgment of conviction, appeal to the D.C. Court of Appeals. So this is likely, under the normal course of events, going to be not just weeks, months. It could be years, candidly. And so that's the reason why all the excitement today about, and it's good, I think it's a right thing to do, but this notion that there's been a criminal referral made and the excitement about what's going to happen next, I think is a bit elevated.
Man, you're being a buzzkill, Jim.
I am.
That's my good friend, former U.S. Attorney James Antel. He'll come back. You got a few more minutes.
I will come back.
Jim, if you were to choose a meat waffle flavor, what would be your favorite meat waffle, sir?
You know, I probably would go with something with fish meat. I'm not sure, but wrap the waffle in some kind of a fish here in Wisconsin for a good Friday fish fry, and then we'll go with that.
Perhaps a impossible meat waffle for Lent and all that sort of stuff. He is connoisseur and former U.S. Attorney James Antel, friend of ours. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. All things legal. All things important. According to us.
It is a 96-ounce prime-aged beef steak. And if you or any member of your party orders the old 96er, it finishes.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Hey, indulge me just a second. Our fine guest, he's stuck around. He's James Santel, former U.S. attorney, current friend of ours. But I've been sent Hazel's menu. The meat waffle. A malted Belgian waffle with bacon, ham, and cheddar jack cheese stuffed inside maple syrup and whipped butter. Oh, God. That sounds good. Hazel's Northeast in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Check it out. That sounds scrumptious. Jim,
this is great. I don't have to worry about copyright infringement when I make my waffle cone.
Jim, I appreciate you sticking around, man. I hope we're not making you hungry over here. The Steve Bannon, the contempt referral to the Department of Justice. You sent me a little text before we come on the show, and I always appreciate it. You always tell me, hey, Crudy, if you were smart, here's what you'd ask me. So let me ask you about inherent contempt, Jim, because a smart guy told me it'd be a smart question to ask you. I can't hear him. Bear with me. Here you go. You're back.
All right. So again, after what you described as my buzzkill with respect to the criminal referral here, which again, a viable way of doing this, there's also a civil remedy here, pursue civil matters, which actually could be more expeditious in the end, for a variety of reasons there. But let's talk inherent contempt, something that it's out there a little bit. There's some discussion about it. There's some interest in the Congress in doing it. And I'll give you a little bit of civics background on this, a little history on it. On two different occasions, frankly, and not too long ago, in 1927 and in 1821, situations where the United States Congress did in fact have witnesses before them, two different, very different cases. And both of them refusing to testify for various reasons gets up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court says in 1821 that Congress has the inherent authority to arrest and detain recalcitrant witnesses. 1927, it adds to that, building on this previous case, Anderson versus Dunn, saying that it covers private citizens, not just officials. Basically, this affirmation has been done again twice, in 1821, 1927, most recently. In a case involving a fellow named Molly Doherty, Supreme Court voted 8-0 that the Senate had the right to hold anyone, even a private citizen, in contempt for refusing to testify. How does that work? You send the sergeant at arms out to grab the body, quite literally, as they did a fellow named John McGrain, and went to Cincinnati in 1927, arrested Molly Doherty, brought him back to the United States Congress to answer. There's a situation where, again, probably with a little bit of a change in rules, there's some effort by Ted Lieu, who's one of the congressmen there, introduced some legislation in April to codify this notion, to enforce subpoenas, and it's still pending. But you can grab a body under this theory. Again, good Supreme Court law maybe requires a little bit of a rules changes. Go out there, grab a body, and then you will get that more recent and current satisfaction, Mike, of having the human being in front of you, presumably brought back to the United States Congress and forced to answer questions by Jamie Raskin and others about where it is he has been and what it is he is doing. Inherent authority of the United States Congress to act.
Well, that would be a euphoric feeling indeed, Jim Santel. Hey, got to ask you, right here in our backyard, the Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin is suing to block the crazy election fraud that we have going on, or at least the subpoenas springing therefrom. Jim, I know that you and I and anyone with reasonableness in our nature are not supportive of this audit, but suddenly the state of Wisconsin, we're up on the crazy clock. We got a former, to my opinion, corrupted Supreme Court justice, shown himself to be a partisan, shown himself to be not qualified to even conduct this election review, and that he claims publicly. I don't really understand how elections work. And we've got a parallel investigation going on from the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau that seemingly says, well, you could do a few things better, but, you know, we had stand-up elections here in the state of Wisconsin. Jim, what do you think the outcome of the lawsuit of Attorney General Josh Call will be? And do you think this is sound policy? Do you think the Attorney General should be trying to block this? I mean, I think there are probably a few Democrats in Arizona that wished they could have blocked the witch hunt going on there in Maricopa County.
Right, absolutely. And again, as you know, we exchanged more of those texts back and forth, you and about this very issue. I applaud Josh Call for coming forward and doing this after saying earlier that he was obviously, like many of the rest of us, outraged and appalled by the fact that in Wisconsin we have this completely illegitimate investigation going on into an election that was, in fact, legitimately conducted. The vote wasn't stolen. It was legitimate across the board. The premise for this, of course, once again, we had a good vote. Why are we investigating this from the first place? So I'm very glad to see that our chief state law enforcement officer, after announcing his outrage, is finally following up with some action to address this, going into Dane County Court, asking the subpoenas be quashed as an abuse of power. I would offer that, again, I have not read the pleading itself. I'm glad to see that. I think it's appropriate, it's aggressive, but it is also suited to what he should do within his powers. I would hope that the court would not only look at that, but also other relief in the forms of simply directing the investigation to end. Have we had precedent here in Wisconsin about that? Well, maybe in the opposite direction. You may recall that a number of years ago, there was a federal judge named Rudolph Randall. I appeared in front of him many occasions, who stopped an investigation of a certain former governor into campaign violations. That the decision there, I would say, was also not only wildly premature, but also inadequate to address the situation there. And I was
not. Well, it was a partisan decision. Randa, as a federal judge, was far more partisan than most judiciary are historically.
To my mind, very disappointingly so, given what I know about Rudolph Randa. But the point of that is that he stopped an investigation even before the criminal process investigatively. No charges yet in that case, for sort of dramatically. It's not a perfect analogy, but yes, we've got precedent in the state of Wisconsin for going in and stopping investigations if in fact there is a reasonable basis to do it. Now, again, the Scott Walker situation, I think there was not, but the process is there. And so to those folks who might say, well, gee, the Attorney General shouldn't be messing in this, we do have that certain precedent. I would urge our Attorney General and others supporting him and this process generally to push further and say to that same end, this investigation needs to come to a close. You don't need, even as Josh has said internally, we don't need to get to the legitimacy, how it's being conducted. He said, you know, it's not being done well. Let's not even get there. The predicates for this are ridiculous. It needs to be brought to an end. I applaud his efforts to push back on this. We need to do even more.
James Hentel, sadly, this interview comes to an end, man. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Always appreciate you coming around. I got another fine guest following you, Dr. Jillian Bettino. She is a U.S. senatorial candidate from the great state of Wisconsin. And Jim, final thought here. If you ever find yourself in Minneapolis, go to Hazel's Northeast and order yourself a meat waffle and tell them the Devil's Advocate sent you.
I'm pulling up the menu now, Mike, and good to see you. Good to see you next time.
See you at Hazel's. Have a great weekend, Jim. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Beef. It's what's for dinner. Hamburgers, sizzling beef, spicy braised beef, barbecued beef ribs, beef Wellington, pepper beef.
Listen, if I can get a dessert down, I think you could throw in a couple of Paul Bunyan hats for the kids.